There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't let streaks or smearing on your windshield compromise your visibility. When it's time to replace your wiper blades, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts and see our selection. Our professional parts people will even install your new wiper blades while you wait. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more. Welcome to Cutting the Distance. Today, I'm live from the field. I'm joined with John Weick of Northwest Spur Chasers. He served 35 years in the military and military aviation work. He's originally from the Northwest Hardwoods of Connecticut, where he started hunting at the age of 10. He moved to Washington about 28 years ago. From there, he started hunting turkeys shortly after, and he's never looked back. To describe the way John hunts turkeys, he's a mountain turkey hunter who would rather sit at home and watch TV than hunt turkeys out of a blind. He has a run-and-gun style, chasing and setting up on gobbling birds, and it's his only style. Today's episode, I want to give a quick recap on the Kansas turkey hunt, as well as the hunt we're on right now here in Washington. So welcome to the show, John.
Hey, good to be here, Jason.
We're 2 weeks into season. Are you tired of it yet?
Oh, yeah. No. Tired. How can you get tired of doing this?
Yeah, it's been fun. I get tired during the season. It's long days. This morning we got up at what, 3:45, I think, to try to get past the bird,
and yep,
you go to bed at 10. But long days, so we're physically tired. But I'm not tired of turkey hunting yet.
Yeah, no, try not to be anyway.
Yep. So we're gonna start this episode like every episode of Cutting the Distance. We are going to take questions from our listeners. If you have questions you'd like to submit to myself or our guests, email them to us at ctd@phelpsgamecalls.com. I have to laugh at this question before I get ready to give it to you, because we've both got this question on this hunt. As we're hunting, people are messaging us this. Do you have a spot for me to hunt?
Oh yeah, that's a question I never hear. Never. Yeah, we don't hear any of that too much at all.
So because we all know that's all that matters when it comes to killing a turkey, right? If you have the right spot, then everything else is going to be a gimme.
Oh yeah, it's golden. You just pick the right spot in the woods, you're going to kill birds. It's real easy.
So let's elaborate on that question a little bit. And rather than give them spots, how would you prepare somebody to go investigate, look, find, e-scout, whatever it may be, good hunting spots? You know, here in Washington, and I know you hunt Idaho, Montana, other places. Like, what's a good recipe for figuring out where to hunt?
Well, first thing for us, always, you know, we jump right on Onyx and then mix Onyx with Google Earth at the same time. And we're looking for, you know, state land that has a lot of variation in it. We like the higher elevations. Our birds tend to move up pretty quick. They'll follow the snow line. They'll chase it right up to whatever elevation that you want to go up to. Not that you can't find them down low as well. But, you know, we prefer to hunt the upper stuff, so we find the birds up there as they're chasing up the snow. But yeah, you get on Onyx and start looking at timberland. You got all kinds of different timberlands out here you can get into, some IEP stuff as well. And it's just pretty easy to find. If you're using Onyx, it's going to identify it for you and then mix it up with Google Earth at the same time and say, you know, are there farmlands that aren't that far away that the birds probably wintered in? and known after that, as stuff starts greening up and some of the lower shrubs start leafing out, the hens are going to start nesting and you're going to find the birds. It's not that complicated if you're able to look.
Yep. And that's one thing you touched on there a little bit is a relationship to ag. One thing I love about the birds we've been hunting the last couple of days is they have no real requirement to go back down there, right? One thing I don't like is hunting a bird that would rather run down to a field or run down where he'd been getting, chicken scratch all winter.
Yeah.
These birds are mountain birds, but you still have to look at that ag or those farms to figure out like where they came from this winter, and they're going to be in, somewhat close relationship to those.
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, granted, there are some places we've gone to where it's so deep and dark and there's no ag anywhere. There's no fields. There's no people. I mean, I can think of some places that we've crawled into just to elk hunt, and in the middle of nowhere, you're looking at your onyx, you're like, where do these birds live? And there they are staring at you.
Yeah.
So it's not the ones you really want to hunt probably, but
yeah,
they're there.
Yeah. We were hunting a spot last night and you had made mention that, you have a buddy that lives there and you know, at the time when he says the birds leave, his yard, they're now up in the mountains. So it's like, and then maybe that's why Washington's doing so well right now, is because we do have a lot of ag, winter ag, that supports those birds. And so our populations are staying real high, even though we did lose, I think, a few hens this year with the winter.
I think so, too. I mean, we had a really cold winter, but on top of that, we had powder. And powder is just not something that happens out here. You talk to the biologists, they say that's one of the reasons that we have such great populations, is that we have snow that the birds can stand on top of, walk around, and still get a lot of feed. But this year, we had cold right up front, and we had powder for a long time. And the hens, they were pushing through it. And people even gave reports where, like, man, we're watching these hens struggle just to move through the snow and find food.
Unfortunate. So, yeah. So just a quick recap. Get on Onyx. Figure out where you can hunt. Find an area that's somewhat adjacent to ag. And you're most likely, especially in Washington, you're going to find birds.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into it a little bit later. And it's like, just let your boots, burn up some boot leather and go figure it out.
Absolutely. Carry lots of water with you.
Yeah, I have. Question number two, which we've lived a little bit here already in the first couple of days of this hunt. Birds are gobbling really hard in the roost. They fly down, gobble a little bit. They'll gobble up my calls, but about 30 minutes later, they haven't committed to my setup or my calling, and they've completely shut up. What should I do, or why is that happening? And the question was, what should I do? But I think more importantly is, why is that happening, and what can you do to take, you really can't take advantage of it, but what can you do to maybe turn that into a positive? Or what do you do with that information to maybe get that turkey, later that day or the following morning?
Right. Well, first thing is take note as to what their pattern was when they did it. Because, maybe you're not going to be successful today, but you're creating a setup for understanding them better and their movements, so you can put that in your pocket and come back in the next time and get in front of them rather than behind them. And a lot of the birds are just going to be henned up because we're like 2 weeks behind still in our season, honestly. Some friends I know have found a couple of nests. I found one too with one egg in it only, and that was just a few days ago. So, with this weather we had and the snow just leaving the woods still, things just greening up, we're just behind. So they're going to be pretty henned up still, which is not normal so much right now. Yep. And that's one of the biggest reasons. They're moving away from you because they're following a hen. They're gobbling, say, yeah, come join us. We're heading this way.
Yep.
We have it in mind where we want to be, and you're not there.
Yep. We're going to get into the 9 a.m. spark or whatever that we can.
Oh, yeah.
And we can use some of this information. We did it already. They're gobbling there, but let's keep in mind where we last heard them, like where that ideal spot for them to be was, because we are early in the nesting season, but that hen's eventually going to break off around 8:39, lay that egg.
Absolutely.
And he's going to probably reverse that trail back to where you started on that morning.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's great to start on a bird because it's obvious they want to be in that area. They're comfortable there. There's what they need there. But yeah, I think a lot of people get discouraged. The bird stops gobbling around here it's getting light so early, 6:37, and they're like, I'm going to go in for breakfast, and it's the better hunting still ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Sit down, take a nap if you need to.
Yeah. go to what you think is the best looking, where you've seen the most droppings, where you know that they're feeding on the greenest grasses, the greenest shrubs, and hang out and take a nap and wait for them to come back. So So one thing we get asked a lot, me personally, is, you know, we make an owl call, we make a crow call, we use a woodpecker call, we use, you know, different locators. The question we got is, when and how should I use the different locators? And so I'll let you kind of roll into that. You know, me personally, you've seen what I've used. It's an owl call. We use a crow call, and we use a woodpecker. But kind of give us a little bit of how and when those should be used. I don't think you should be blowing on an owl call in the middle of the day, and I don't think you should be cranking on a woodpecker call, you know, before first light. So
absolutely.
So give us a little bit of, you know, how you think they should be used and what typically works the best.
Yeah, well, I mean, we experienced that in the last couple of days hunting together too. You know, early morning, obviously you get into an owl call and just to get a locator on them, and they're usually going to gobble back pretty good. So, you know, practice that up, you know, make it realistic. You want some realism, but obviously noise is what it's all about, and that works really good. And then we move into the day a little bit, and Jason proved really well how well good the woodpecker call worked. And they were really answering that really well. Yeah. That was a great call. I love that call.
Yeah, and then crow, in my opinion, is real similar to that woodpecker. Yeah. Like, don't use it. I mean, crows start calling early in the morning, but they're already doing the work for you.
Yeah.
I feel like a crow is more of that same thing, you know, a couple hours after daylight through the middle of the day, and then, you know, start to tone it down towards later. And a little quick side story. Yesterday, the first morning, me, you, and Simone were hunting together. We were hiking up. We heard a few birds off in the distance. We're like, yeah, man, the bird we thought was there just isn't there. And I won't say we get frustrated. You're just a little like scratching our heads. And
We're only 6 miles into it at that point.
Yeah. You're in mixed company. So you're like, I don't really know if you want me to use my owl call, but we kind of all agreed. Like, yeah, go, nothing you can hurt with an owl. And we blew on that thing, and he was, what, 70 yards up the hill in a tree?
Yeah, right there.
We're able to set up, and he did his thing. And then, so we thought we had that bird today, did where he had went. Same thing. We got a little nervous. Like, every bird on every other ridgetop mountain draw was gobbling up there. You know, we were hearing, we were pointing different directions.
Yep.
We got a bird there. We got a big sounding bird over there. We got a Jake over there. And our bird never gobbled. And we were starting to debate, well, we got birds hammering to our left, and we got a ridge there. We can get behind it and slip in. And same thing. We're like, well, there's nothing to lose if you blow on the owl call again. Blew on it this morning, and he finally answered 20
right
minutes
up
after. You know, so it's early morning, you know, use those owl calls. But locators are important because in my opinion there, we weren't close enough for a tree elk to be heard.
Right.
I mean, he may have heard it.
Yeah.
But it's like the owl call, there's no real harm that can be done, and it kind of maybe it actually worked against us because we stayed at that tree for another half an hour while he got around us. But use your locators. You know, I used to be similar, you know, go out and only use my hen calls, but there are times we've seen it here where a hen call doesn't work and they hammer at that woodpecker, and it's just that shot gobble aspect that I think, you know, it doesn't hurt.
No.
If they're not answering your hen call, follow it up with a woodpecker. Or if you think you're getting in close, we did it a few times here, like, well, we don't really want a turkey call again. Like, let's hit him with the woodpecker.
Yeah.
See if we're, you know, if we're in a spot to set up. I don't know. In my mind, I maybe overthink it. I always wonder, like, are turkeys smart enough to know that there's a woodpecker and a turkey hen calling from the same spot? But I don't know. I don't know if they're that smart. We usually just put them on top of each other.
We don't know. I mean, I've definitely used locator calls. Not a lot, honestly, but definitely if I'm trying to get into an area that I don't know really well exactly where he is at that time, and I just want to get his location so I can maneuver to an area to create a setup and then pull him in. So, yeah, I mean, you definitely want to have one you're going to use for sure.
And then not necessarily a locator call. We'll talk about it a little bit later. Box calls specifically on this hunt, whether it's pressured birds, whether it's something different, has been working really well when maybe our, you know, neither of our mouth calls might be working right. You hit that box call and it's just something about it. So we're
going to
jump into that a little bit more when we get into part of the Washington recap. So once again, if you have a question for me or my guests and you want to submit them to us, send us a social message, email us at ctd@phelpsgamecalls.com. We'll do our best to get them here on the show. So now we're going to jump into our discussion. I want to ask John some questions. So I'm going to start out with a question. I think I already know your answer, but... We always talk about patterning birds as maybe being and knowing your birds in that area and what they like to do is maybe more important than your ability to call or you know, understand turkeys. So if you had to take one or the other, a patterned bird that you've watched for 3 days do its thing, but you'd have to leave your calls in the truck, or a brand new area, but you could take your calls. Which one are you picking?
Oh my gosh. This is about actually killing a bird, or is it a personal choice?
Or just what you, personal probably for you. And then I'm going to switch the question up here and ask it in a different context.
Okay. Personal for me, I want my calls.
So once again, this is just, and we've talked lots on this hunt as we walk up and down roads. I believe it's because you're out here for a certain reason, right? You want to work the bird. You want to get him to gobble. So if you left your calls here, it wouldn't, you know, once again, you're back basically blind hunting. We mentioned earlier, you'd rather not hunt.
Yeah, it's just not my choice. Yeah. I mean, I want to go out here and play turkey chess, and I can only do that with the calls, and I'd rather walk away from a bird that's just in a pattern and doesn't want to talk and go find a bird that does want to talk. Yep. So, yeah.
There is, though, after getting your butt kicked for a day or two, that you're about to the point where it's like, all right, I'm willing to sit on this bird. And just out of spite at this point, but
yeah, there are those birds. There are those like times.
Just getting your butt.
The birds that you with. Start giving names to.
Yep. Yep. All right. So let's switch that question around. Let's say you're a newer hunter and your main concern was just killing a bird. Would you change your answer? Would you take that pattern bird over calling?
Yeah, definitely. You know, I think back to the earlier days of learning all of this. You wanted to fill that tag. I mean, that's a big pull for every new turkey hunter, especially. You know, they put the money in, they bought the license, they got the tag, and they want to fill that tag. So that makes sense. So definitely, if you can pattern a bird, you know what he's going to do. You've watched him do it a few times. They really do get hooked into a pattern within reason. And so, yeah, in that case, I'm going to go sit on that pattern and take that bird, fill that tag.
Yep. I figured that was going to be your answer.
Yeah, that's the honest answer.
Yeah, and we're going to talk, remind me to talk a little bit about patterns and then what your opinion versus what we've seen out here. When you add some hen calling to their pattern, it disrupts it a little bit. Even though we want to call and we want to do this, I feel that calling in a spot where maybe the hen doesn't want to take her tom by, or they didn't hear a hen there last night. Like I think there's also a little bit of chance to booger up the setup.
Oh yeah.
Just from calling. So we've looked at each other multiple times. Like, should we just stay quiet and let the birds, it's like, try at least until he gets closer and more committed. So remind me to pick back up on that one. When we get to the
sounds
recap.
Good.
So as we're walking down the roads, as we're, let's say we locate a bird on this hunt, many times we have said this, don't do what a typical hunter would do.
Yeah.
Like there's a bird there and, we see boot tracks as we're on public ground here. There's other people hunting this, some birds are pressured. Some birds you can walk and get to a spot where maybe they haven't heard as much, but we've said that don't do what a typical hunter would do. So you locate a bird. It's like, the easiest path of resistance to walk down the road, get there and call, where we've mentioned this. And, I believe it's important to not necessarily overthink it, but just put some thought into it. Like these turkeys aren't dumb. They've been called to from this road or that spot, or they've heard it all. What are we doing? We've talked about like fading away with our calling. We bushwhacked to my bird, some of this stuff. Like, what are some things people can think about as they're out there and do a little bit different? Like, don't be afraid to hit the bush. Like, let's just elaborate on that. Because there is so much stereotypical calling from roads, setting up on bends in the roads.
Right.
How do we break that habit and make ourselves a little more successful?
Well, yeah, I mean, depending on how much pressure's in an area, that can be hard to figure out. Sometimes it takes a little while. So you're going to have to figure out what's going on in the area that you're hunting. And then as far as pressured birds are concerned, it is important, I've found. They get conditioned. They get conditioned by us. What are all the hunters doing? Are they calling from the same spot? Are they using the same calls all the time? And that's why it's important to keep a bunch of different calls. Yeah, I love mouth calls, but I'm no dummy. I keep other calls with me, too. And sometimes you got to try different ones and move to a different spot. We've already seen that happen ourselves. Another great tactic, when it comes to that type of scenario is if you're hunting with a partner, especially, get the bird interested, but he's holding up or he's actually moving away, but he's still talking to you. Then you can take the other caller and have him start walking away from you, the shooter, and just pull that bird in. I mean, and it works great. We've done it numerous times.
Yep. Yeah, that bird only wants to, if he's with hens, only go come back so far.
Right.
Or
he just doesn't believe it, maybe. Yeah. So he's like, she's walking away. Man, I can walk over there safely now and take a look. Is she really real? And then he's in front of the shooter. Yep.
Or even the lone toms just aren't comfortable leaving their, their area where they've got good visibility.
Right.
Or a lot of this area we're hunting, There might be a road system, and some of the ridges are very clean, but then they may not want to be, they may not be willing to go through the jack straw, just thick garbage either. And so you're not going to get them to cut that.
Right.
You know, so we've ran into a little bit of vegetation really causing, you know, some impediment on their travel path.
Say the least. Yeah. Definitely.
And then same thing. I don't necessarily, we had got that bird this morning going. We thought, oh, he's going to come down the road. So we did what a typical hunter would do. We ran down to the edge of the road and squawked on our hen call. And the next time we heard him gobble, he was literally walking down the creek, which we never thought he would do.
Yeah.
And so it's just one of those things, like, is that one of those times where we did what we thought was right, but that's what every other hunter would do. Like, oh, we're going to go set up on the side of the road. And then that, whether it is or not, it's just one of those things that goes through my mind as I rethought this morning, like, we did exactly what a hunter would do. Did that affect it or maybe not? Maybe he was going to get drugged down there by a hen anyways, but it always makes you think.
Right.
Could we have, and multiple times, even this morning, like we've, and yesterday, we would try to get like one move ahead of the turkey, right?
Right, yeah.
The more we do this and the more it keeps, I'm like, we need to almost be like, we need to guess like two or three moves ahead, right? To get us some more, because it seems like we're always playing like, oh, well, that makes sense. We think we, but then they beat you there or they do something different. It's like, well, shoot, we knew that second or third, you know, that second or third idea, like they were going to a, look, we should have just went there versus trying to cut them off in the middle or.
Right, right, yeah. And that's another good thing for having Onyx.
We were in an area today. We didn't really know the clean way through. And we had those three or four different birds gobbling. And finally there's an open ridge in here. We got in there and it was the most beautiful turkey ridge ever. It has everything they need.
Yeah, you never would have known it was there if you didn't flip on Onyx. And you're like, look, this is open in there. Yeah we got in there. I'm like, I want to live here. This is nice.
Yeah. It was literally the only way we could get through this area without, bushwhacking horribly. So,
but now you know where they were set up and where they were gobbling from in the morning. You know their fly down area, and you know their pattern to get out of there. So,
Now the hard part will be setting up in there in the morning and not touching a call.
Yeah,
like we say, sometimes you can get in there and booger them up. I think I'm very, very confident. You know, we always joke as we sit down on our setups this morning. We had about a 3%er. I sitting here, mid afternoon, I would go into that spot with an 80% chance of killing a bird there. Tomorrow.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, this morning we're like 30% chance of this being successful.
It was
turned to zero, but that's okay.
I mean, there, and the reason you need to ask this question is we walked a road system today just trying to explore the area, and we've seen two dead birds, somebody had breasted them out, taken the legs, basically cleaned up birds. And it's like, man, there are a lot of birds getting killed in here.
Yeah. We didn't realize how much pressure was in here until we started finding the carcasses. I'm like, no wonder this is happening the way it is. Now we know we got to change our tactics.
One predator. I mean, one was so fresh, a predator hadn't even got to it. The other one been picked on a little bit, but both real.
Yeah.
Fresh kills. So, yeah. Don't do what a turkey hunter would do. And that doesn't, I mean, you have to take that with a grain of salt. Like there are things that are just the right move, but don't typically do the same thing. You know,
sure.
We talk about 7 to 9 note yelps. I'm going to get into the calling a little bit. You hear everybody. Yep. Somebody's just going to do their normal yelp.
Yeah.
You listen to me and you call, it's like too loud, one quiet, three, and throw a bubble cluck in there. And it's like, and if you listen to real hens, that's what they're doing. They're raising their tone
up and down, they're facing one direction, turning and facing the other direction. They're not monotone with a straight note.
Yeah. And these turkeys, I mean, I don't want to give them too much credit. They're not the smartest bird on the planet, but they're also not dumb. They get conditioned.
They're turkeys. They're doing what turkeys do.
So calling different, we're not afraid to purr. We're not afraid to cluck, bubble cluck, mix it up.
Yeah.
Just sound like a realistic hen. And there's times where, and we also escalate our calls. I think we start with a low volume and then nothing answers. And then our second set of yelps and clucks will be a little louder. It's just, you don't typically hear a hen out here just yak. She's just not doing that.
No.
And I think 95% of the hunters that come out here, that's how they call.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to diverge off of the don't do what a typical hunter, turkey hunter would do, but it's important to think about out there, like, can I get this bird to work somewhere besides down this road where he's been called? It's just changing the game a little bit, or by little decisions, can I get, can I call him up a ridge versus a road, all of that.
Mm-hmm. There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at OReillyAuto.com/meateater. That's OReillyAuto.com/meateater. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Let's talk a little bit about the style of turkey hunting we're doing here. You know, a typical day in the turkey woods, you know, for most might be a couple miles, maybe a couple setups, get on some hot birds and you're done. This is these sort of, you know, Merriam's, Rio's type hunts. They're completely opposite. Like we've talked about it multiple times. You might as well be hunting elk or, you know, mountain mule deer or whatever.
Yeah.
Yesterday when we killed, well, we both killed our a bird yesterday. We got back and I pulled out the iPhone. You know, it's like 12 plus miles.
Yep.
Standard. You know, 100 foot of elevation gain. Like we're working our tail off. And I think a little bit of it relates back to pressure in the area.
Yeah. They've moved further out of it.
Yep. And the birds that you, there are birds, there's no denying there are birds from here to mile marker 1.5 in this area. there are birds there, but you can tell when you call to them that they've been worked or they've heard a call before.
They've worked hard.
Versus, I joked yesterday, you should never see a mile marker more than 3 while you're turkey hunting, but we started to see those mile markers deep in there.
Yeah, that's true.
You get in there and now those turkeys maybe have only heard a handful of calls from guys or maybe haven't got bumped and they start to react like they should, like a tom without a hen.
Yeah.
You know, yesterday, this chunk that we are hunting now, we literally touched all 4 corners of it aside from one big peak on the opposite side, but we could hear up there.
Yeah.
We put in work and
oh, that was hardcore. I mean, yeah, we were digging deep to get out there, but, and we knew what Ridgey was on and we're looking at our Onyx as well. And man, we're going to have to crash through thick timber just to avoid being seen on a point and play the game all the way over to the other ridge. And we knew it's going to be a 12-mile day, but we're going to get near that bird.
Yep. And I mean, there were decisions made throughout yesterday where we could have taken, I'm almost don't want to admit it. I still think it was a wild turkey, but he was a domesticated wild turkey of some sorts. He was just very comfortable living off the edge of this public.
Yeah.
So we got drugged down there and we hiked up maybe couple hundred feet and hit a road system.
Yeah.
We could have just as easy taken that road system back towards the truck or to a different area.
Right.
We elected to go. We got to a beautiful basin.
Yeah.
We knew it was going to suck, though, because we had to walk up through a fairly steep clear cut.
But yeah, real steep.
It gave us the ability to sound check an entire canyon, amazing looking turkey country. And when we finally did get to the top, we were able to locate my bird and a different bird. And if we hadn't have put in that extra effort, we wouldn't have had that opportunity.
Yeah, and he heard that sound, too. I mean, he heard it from an area that another hunter probably would never be on as well.
Yeah.
So as that sound got closer to him, it created realism.
Yep. And we'll talk a little bit more about once we located that bird, kind of our approach, and it ties back into the don't do what hunters would do either,
right.
The way we had to approach him just to guarantee that he hasn't, you know, seen or heard something that that he didn't like. So, yeah, a lot of miles. It's in an effort. I feel like you can control the outcome a little better when you're putting in that many miles, finding birds that haven't been messed versus if you're always leaving it to chance, trying to hunt these pressured birds.
Oh yeah.
They're doing sporadic turkey things. You know, we talked about like how smart can something be with that little pea brain of theirs, but they, and I don't know if they're smart or if they just have an uncanny ability to do what just random thing they need to do not to get killed.
Yeah. They're very instinctive. You know, they've dealt with enough pressure. They figured some things out.
Yep.
Educated birds.
Yeah. So I'm going to diverge a little bit from our conversation. Just give a quick update on our Kansas hunt. I'm sure you'll have some stuff to interject with the way that the things were going. So out there in eastern Kansas, you know, we're hunting easterns. We'd been hunting early May, typically. That's typically when you start to get your hens with full nests. They're not near as interested in feeding as long. You're like, all right, money, you know, we've got lone toms. And so we were always told that they're more callable early, so we decided to go there April 20th. We fly out there to Kansas, and everything is a little bit late. And so, or it actually seems to be a little early in Kansas, whatever it is, that those toms are completely henned up all day long. There were some toms we'd see that would still have hens out in the field with them at 1 or 2 o'clock, which it may be extremely late. Like they haven't even started laying their first egg, but I almost can't believe that, you know, April 20th by then, especially being that far south, but, or she had just went and laid her egg, nested for a little bit and then popped right back up a little bit earlier, but we could not call those birds off very easily. Do you have any, and I've always said easterns are more stubborn, they're more difficult, they're more hard-headed.
Oh yeah.
They fly down, they don't mind if they live in the bottoms, they don't care if they ever gobble at you the rest of the time. You know, they'll gobble out of the roost a little bit, but
way more frustrating. I mean, it requires a lot more finesse, you know, a lot of different type tact calling than what we do out here. Our birds out here don't really want to hear a lot of cutting, whereas, you know, easterns, they do. They want to hear it.
Excited.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, and that's sometimes the only time we could get them to get a call or get anything out of them. But they were very, very content just doing what they wanted to do and not dealing with you at all as a hunter. They had their, you know, 7, 8, 10 hens all within eyesight. They were all roosted together every night. You know, they roost a little more, I would say, typical in a typical spot every night there. And they knew all their hens showed up. We sat close to a roost tree one night. All the hens show up. Toms being, I don't know why, they didn't follow their hens out. They come in from a completely different direction, but they all meet at the same roost tree. It's just very difficult to hunt.
More tactics of crawling, a lot of moving, and trying to sneak in and get in the right positions. There's so much more you got to put into it for those easterns.
And just like you had mentioned earlier, you don't like to sit in the blind, and I don't necessarily, we all know when we go to Kansas, if we just sit in a spot, we will kill a bird.
Yeah.
You know, they're very, very patternable, but we don't like to hunt it that way. So what they do is they get us running ridge to ridge with gobbles, and then they would be on the opposite ridge by the time you got, and you're just like, it's almost like you have to sit still to kill them, but who wants to hunt them that way?
Yeah. Some birds, that's, you have no choice. If that's the kind of area you're going to hunt in, I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
Yep. I was able to kill my bird on the first morning there. We didn't really roost. We don't roost those birds in Kansas like we do. And I guess you don't roost here a whole lot. I usually roost pretty, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't do much of that. Honestly, we just go out and listen in the morning and get in tight.
Yeah, which is awesome because every morning is kind of a new morning. I've always liked just that excitement, like knowing I'm 70 to 100 yards on a bird. And I always like to look at it and like, oh, he's going to pitch here and like guess, and I guess 90% wrong, but I still like that game. But there, I was able to, we went out, listen, we had a couple different birds. We had one close. And so we didn't, he didn't only gobbled once early. We had to go set up in the dark. And sure enough, as it started to get daylight, he was 60 yards away in a tree. We had already set our hen out there, not in the right spot for what we wanted. And three jakes fly down first. We're like, oh no, he's just holding up there. Like maybe he doesn't want to fly down because of these jakes. He doesn't want to get bullied around. So we sit there for 20 minutes. He's just gobbling up there in the tree. And we sit there for 40 minutes after the jakes have flown down, gobbling in the tree. And at about, I'm guessing 50, 55 minute mark. And these jakes are just at full strut under his tree. So it almost looks like they're waiting for him to come down and they're going to whip his butt. You know, we had that hen decoy. I don't know exactly what's going through their head, but sure. They were just puffed up under his tree for 50 minutes, 50 yards
just
from
strutting
me.
In the tree. Basically. Then.
So all of a sudden two hens fly down and hit the jakes. And we're like, oh boy, it's about ready to happen. And what I think happened is why we were setting our decoys up, and I was being a dummy because I didn't think that that bird was that close. I had like a spider come land and I was trying to like move my gun barrel around and I loaded my shells. And I think he just got nervous. Like we didn't spook him enough that he just flew out, and just fly away. But we knew something. And I think even his hens knew something, even though they were even deeper than the jakes. And those hens flew down and I was keeping my eyes on her. They flew into the jakes and then you could see they kind of like did the scurry walk away from us, dead away from us. I'm like, oh boy.
They just knew something was right.
And that bird hits the ground. I let him take about two steps and clear everything. I'm like, I know what's going to happen. And so shot that bird. So if it wasn't for an hour of him hanging up in a tree, I wouldn't have hunted for very long. But we were able to get that one killed. And then we went and did a cold sit on a field where we know two big birds had been frequenting, and we only been set up for half an hour, set at just a Dave Smith decoy hen out there, maybe 40 yards from us, a little bit further, but
yeah,
we
sure.
wanted him to pull our attention off of the edge. And all of a sudden, and they're coming, two big giant birds, like old birds, big old paintbrushes on them. And
they could see it.
We're
huh?
able to get him coming to the decoys, but then the non-strutter, he came over and started to mess with the big bird, and he did it at the wrong time. He needed to do it like 10 yards later, because as soon as they started to tussle up and wrap necks and kind of mess with each other, they just went straight to our left at 60 yards and a little too far to shoot, and so we had to let that bird go. They were active in the morning, but you needed to, once again, you really needed to be in the way where they wanted to go. Later in that hunt, we got some really good action. A tom actually pulled off of his hens, came into us, but once again saw something in that decoy he didn't necessarily like.
Wasn't happy
and,
about
and
it.
Exited at about 50 yards, and just not quite the guy I was hunting with wasn't quite comfortable shooting there. But we don't need to tell the whole entire hunt, but it was just one of those things where Easterns are stubborn, and I'm starting to really unlike them, especially now that I only had a 2-day break and was able to come out here and hunt Merriam's. I'm like, man, this is way better for the most part. They answer, sure. They're more huntable. You can get back on them at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and they'll typically start gobbling again. Versus
plus we have terrain you enjoy being in too.
Yeah. And those birds in Kansas, they would just gobble half hour in the morning, half hour at night, and that was all you're getting out of them all day. So real, real frustrating. So we're going to jump more into a Washington focus. Now let's do a little update here. First thing we need to mention is it is hot.
Yes, it is hot.
We're hitting what, mid-80s?
Yeah, we're only a couple days into this high pressure, and it's had its effect for sure.
Yep. And give us a little of your, I'll call it your opinion, but it's also probably pretty factual since you've been out here doing this enough. You talk about like 3 days in a row is what you like to see, no matter what it is, but it needs to be 3 days and then maybe not this hot.
Yeah, I mean, I've experienced this so many different times over the years, it's not even funny. And it's realistic to me, so we'll call it my science if you want. But anytime we've seen a pressure drop or pressure change, whether it's going into a high pressure or a low pressure, if it's extreme like this is, we just went from 50s to low 60s at the most, and then we jumped straight into this high pressure of upper 70s and hitting 80s. And what I've always experienced when that happens, whether it's either direction, it usually takes a good 3 days minimum before things really get back to normal and birds start becoming extremely workable. You can still kill a bird, obviously, we did it, but it took a lot of work. It took more work than it normally does. We've been trying to tell Jason this is not normal.
Yeah.
This is not what we normally experience. It's got to get better. And what I found, it's always about a 3-day mark. And that's just where, whether it's bad weather, you can, it'll 3 days, boom, doesn't matter if it's still bad, as long as you slept into it for 3 days or so.
Yeah, it's, and I, we'll roll into that a little bit, not what I'm used to. So I hunt a different area typically. I haven't been in this area, and I'm a little shocked at how much contrast there is to my normal spot and the way. So you I still think this is pretty dang good hunting, and these guys are telling me this is nothing like it normally is. So I'm excited to see if maybe high pressure holds for a couple more days and we can experience that, you know, third and fourth day, even the fifth day before we head out of camp, and see if those birds really turn it on.
Yeah, I hope so. We're hoping too.
on this hunt, the 9 a.m., and this is, we've always talked about this. If you listen to almost any Cutting the Distance podcast, we always joke about the old timers saying you young guys can go, go hunt those birds off the roost and I'll go kill them at 9 o'clock. I'm gonna eat breakfast. So 9 a.m. and the 3 p.m. kind of the spark, it's the time to be out there.
It really is.
Get on those critters. And the 9 a.m. to me makes a lot of sense. Hens are going to go lay on their nests, go lay their eggs, and those toms find themselves lonely.
Yep.
The 3 p.m. spark is a little bit more interesting to me. It's like, I don't know if it's a temperature thing, if it's the sun's getting low enough finally. Like, why 3 p.m.? Because I'm not going to lie, like, my sweatometer says that 3 p.m. is still damn hot. It's the hottest it's been all day at 3 p.m., and these birds are starting to fire off at 3, 3:30.
Yeah, well, the other good thing about when you have this kind of a high pressure is we can kind of predict they're not going to go sit in it. So, like we did yesterday, we moved to a different area. I knew that area was going to be a little bit cooler in general. But that 3 o'clock time frame has just been golden for a lot of years that I can always think of it. Birds are usually out, and they've spent their day eating. And now it's heading towards their thought process, in my opinion, is, you know, we're going to be starting to gather up. And a lot of times you're just going to see toms out there by themselves, and they've lost their hens for most of the day, but they want to gather back up with them so they can, you know, have their way first thing in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a hen that's kind of starting to talk around that time of day, you're probably looking to gather up with them.
Yep.
And so they're more apt to come in.
Yep. Yeah, we've had great hunts. Well, I killed my bird about 9 a.m. Yours was a little later than 3 a.m., but we got on a bird and worked a bird yesterday for an hour and a half.
Yeah,
probably yesterday, right at 3 o'clock.
I think then, I busted him though walking in.
Yeah, yeah. I think we got picked off. It was some up and down cliffy country, a little bit steep elevations, and it was, I think we just got caught guessing he was a little bit further. But we still worked him for a bit, and then was able to get into a different bird later. So pressured birds here. You start to realize whether, I know you're good. I think I'm pretty good at this thing, but we're starting to realize like pressured birds, no matter how good you are, we're running into some struggles, right? They don't want to play the game. They don't want to turn around. We watched a couple birds through the binos come down, by themselves, one really big bird. It looked like it maybe had a Jake with them in tow. They didn't gobble at all. Coming back 9 o'clock, we did some calling. They did gobble once. I take that back.
On their own. We didn't even make them gobble.
Yeah, as far away from one of my calls on either side as it could get.
Yes, just for sure.
Literally just gobbled on his own. But it's just weird. We were. I wouldn't say we were in their zone, but we were within earshot where two birds without a hen should answer any hen call, and nothing. And we tried resetting up. We went to multiple different spots. Just could not get a peep out of them.
Yeah, they didn't want to talk.
And so we've talked about it, about this afternoon. Like, we just need to go find a spot where maybe somebody hasn't talked to a bird yet, or a bird that very, very few people have
less likely talked to.
We're dealing with some pressured birds here. Turkey hunting is very popular in Washington.
In this zone,
It's for good reason. There's some really, really good turkey hunting here, but There's also a lot of hunters.
We've seen quite a few boots on the road. That's a good indicator. You got pressure.
Yeah, some pressure. So we're dealing with that, and our way to deal with that is, we said, put a lot of boot miles in and try to get to some birds. Or think a little bit outside the box, like, are there short little hikes that maybe don't have good access, or you know, little chunks you can get into on ag edges, whatever it may be. Like, try to find that little, you know, diamond in the rough.
Yeah, don't look for the easy roads in. Look for the stuff that's going to take effort that a lot of people don't want to put that effort into.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store, or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today. O'Reilly Auto Parts are in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offer friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. If you're confused about what part you need, like what wipers are going to be the best, what replacement headlights are going to be the best, go into O'Reilly and talk to the people that work there, because they're great and they're super friendly and they'll get you squared away where you walk out knowing you got the right thing. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. Do you need your windshield wipers replaced? You need a brake light fixed? You need some quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts are your one-stop shop for all things auto do-it-yourself, and you can find what you need in-store or online. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/meat eater. You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Let's talk a little bit. We kind of started going down that path about, you know, we worked our tail off to even locate my bird, but then in my mind, the approach to my bird was a little bit different than what most people would, you know, do. And it goes back to, don't do what a typical hunter would do. So we're climbing up a very steep, real good looking ridge. The turkeys had been on that ridge, real grassy. Get to the top, locate a bird across the canyon, the big canyon we were climbing up. All right, he's there, gobbled a couple times.
He was just on the ridge we were on too. He's been moving.
Yeah. And so we know where he's at. We get up, we climb. Simone said there's a road up there, another 50 yards.
Yeah.
We get to the road. And at that very point, it would have been very easy to walk that road directly to his gobble.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would have been the fastest, easiest route for us to get in.
Like, most people would have got there and been like, oh, this road leads right to the ridge that he's on. Yeah. You know, the only problem was, you get down there about 400 or 500 yards and you're going to be completely exposed to the ridge that he was on. And if he looks out there, sees you, anything's up, or if you try to call to him and like really get his eyes over to that road anywhere in between, the gig's up. You're not going to call a bird in that's seen you.
He might gobble, but he's probably not going to come in.
He's not going to come in. So we look at it and we're like, oh man, we got to climb the next little knob and the next little knob, and we got to stay rolled over so he can't see us or hear us. And then we get to the end, and once again, it would have been very easy to just backtrack and hit the road just a little bit further back. But
yeah,
we had to, you know, it was put your hoods on.
Oh, it was put, you know,
tuck everything in, and it was one of those just dry stick snapping and crunching and cracking.
Oh yeah,
but we did it on just enough, I think, on the backside that, you know, it wasn't right in his face, and we took the absolute hardest route to get there. But the nice thing was, when we finally did hit the road, we knew we were behind his ridge, we were out of his eyesight, we were out of everything, and we got to that point without screwing it up.
Exactly.
Where we could have screwed it up real bad.
And he heard our call on that other ridge.
Yep.
And then he never saw anybody else. Yep. And the next time he heard our call, it was closer to him. So
it was just, I don't want to necessarily say we did something that not everybody else would do, but I think a lot of people would have just walked that road. And so it's just going that extra step, making sure that you don't screw up the opportunity that you have and keep it intact, right? It's,
yeah.
If you blow it up early, then you might as well not even walk over there. So keep it intact.
I mean, look how many miles we put into it. I mean, it's like, do we want to give up going the best possible route after all these miles? No, let's give it every ounce we got.
Yep.
It paid off.
So we'll, follow that up. So we get there, he gobbles to the woodpecker call. That's one of those times where not blowing a turkey call is like one of the few good times. Like, we want a little bit of that shock and awe. You don't want to necessarily disclose your location because he doesn't know there's a hen here right now.
Right.
We woodpecker call from the road, answers. Simone's been there, so we didn't have to look at Onyx or anything. We just know, go down there. We got on his ridge, get set up, and we're going to talk a little bit about certain calls here on the box call on your bird, but on this bird, I think I yelped a little bit on my mouth call, and I'm like, huh?
Nothing.
Well, John, and John starts to yelp, and sometimes I think he does this just so he can say, ha, bird answered me and not you, but no, we call a little bit different.
This is my big chance, everybody.
We call a little bit different pitches, different, yeah. I mean, and the bird hammers back at him. I'm like, all right, I'm not calling for my own bird in. You know, it's like, I didn't want to, but it's like, I'm just done calling.
And we
want
to kill this bird.
Yeah. So we set up at a tree. We get all set up. We put the, we didn't have
decoy that day.
So we get all set up. Simone drops back. So we were at a weird spot where this ridgeline trail split. So we set up.
This is a sharp ridge too. There was a lot of room.
This is a great segue into my next point, but we might as well roll it in. We set up at an angle, right?
Yep.
This bird was not going to walk. A lot of people, even myself, the first, your instinct is to set up right here because you can see down the ridge.
Right.
But guess what? When that turkey gets visible and you can see it, it can see you, and there's a lot of chance for stuff to go wrong.
He's going to pick you.
He's going to pick something out. So we've set up at an angle. Up at an angle that gives you the ability to shoot both trails, both angles, and keep his eyes off of you.
We want to try to get that 90-degree angle if we can, possibly somehow. If you're using a decoy, it's even better, and you know, putting that decoy out where if he's going to see it, he's also shootable at the same time.
Yep.
But just don't have him coming straight into you with his eyes. Yep.
And one thing we've did with the decoy the first evening, and then this morning we brought one, is set that decoy up so that you don't believe you're going to be in its line of sight when it does see it. Because if you're behind it, the idea of the decoy is to take his eyes away from you.
Right.
But I've seen a lot of people set up where they're like straight in line with their decoy where they expect that bird to come. It's set that thing off at a 45 degree to your left from where you think the bird's going to come and let it see the decoy before it sees you. That way, as he comes around, it gives you a chance to move your gun, whatever it may be. But don't set that bird up.
Don't line up with it. That's a good point. Don't line up with it. And that does happen. I've had people send me a text. Man, I just made a classic mistake. I lined up right behind the decoy. Yeah, I was busted so far.
It's instinctive though, a little bit, right?
If you
don't think about it, you're like, well, the bird's coming this way.
Yep.
I want this decoy towards him, and then you go straight behind it, and you're just in line. And I think a lot of people get picked off. And a lot of people say like, oh, I didn't. You know, like I just told the story, didn't like my decoy. It's like, well, maybe didn't like seeing the, you know, your face
something
behind the decoy
or
the shine of your gun.
You
never
fast.
Know what. Back to my
angles.
Bird, we get set up. Simone set up behind us. You're set up to my right. I think you yelp a couple more times, and he gobbles twice from down low.
Yeah.
And me and you were kind of BSing at the tree, like, wow, we don't want to have to keep pulling gobbles out of him, and you know, you don't want to have to force everything.
Right.
And I think we just get done finishing up that conversation, and he's right. You can tell there's no more timber between him and us.
He cut the distance in half that
fast.
We're
like, all right, he's here.
So
I click my safety and we're waiting, and I can see he comes. I can see his head bobbing from the right.
We can hear him spitting and drumming.
Loud. I forgot. I evidently assume everybody's deaf when we're calling birds. And so I'm like, John, you hear him spitting? Yeah, I hear him.
He's been drunk.
I just thought you might not.
It's getting loud. It's getting loud.
So he shows up, and we were hoping he comes a little bit like straight down my barrel, like at 12 o'clock. Which we just said we don't want to do, but this is pretty
brushy.
Well,
we wanted to see his head come up going towards it.
Yeah, but he comes up more like at my 2 o'clock and works towards my 12 o'clock.
Right.
And I see his head bobbing about 3 steps and then he gets to a spot, and anybody that's hunted turkeys long enough, you just read their mannerisms and his head goes boink.
Straight up in the air. He's like, where is she?
A little bit of turn to the left towards us and pow.
Yep.
And he's about 30 yards and knew he killed him, and then all of a sudden I hear John say, I don't know if I could see him very well. And I'm like, oh, dang it, because I just assumed, because I had such a good view that, but anyways, it was a great hunt.
It was a good classic setup. We did everything right, you know, and we didn't overcall him. He did what a bird's supposed to do, what everybody hopes. And yeah, I mean, for filming wise, I was on your right. If I'd been on your left, I would have seen him perfectly like you, but I mean, we're still going to see him through the shrub. He stopped right behind that shrub and stuck his head up.
Yeah, great hunt. We couldn't have killed him at a higher elevation.
Yeah, no, we were at the top.
The tippy top peak of the whole place, but it was cool.
Furthest away, highest top.
Yeah. So we talked about setting up at an angle, which I really wanted to cover, which
we
did a lot on this. And then last night on your bird, we jumped in an area we've already mentioned that was cooler, a little flatter. We needed a little break after getting my bird all the way back to camp. I do want to... Don't call me a wuss, but I just want to say packing a 20-ish pound bird for 4 miles on a shoulder sling, it becomes very uncomfortable.
It sure does.
that's my complaint of the day. I'll take it every day. I'd rather take that complaining. But so we get your bird located after you knew there was kind of a little honey hole at the back end of this public piece.
Yeah.
We get back there. We got some birds answering way down. We're like, we're not going to make a play on them this late. And we just get to the edge, and we get hit by two birds.
One you just said, too, wouldn't it be nice if we could kill a bird with this view? And I'm like, that's the goal.
It was beautiful.
That's the goal.
we get hit by two birds to one of John's. And so remember this little point. John yelps with a mouth call.
Yep.
And we get a bird to answer straight ahead and probably at 9 o'clock to our left. And just to set the scene, they're probably over a 45-degree slope, like very steep.
Yeah,
canyon
very,
country.
Very
like,
steep.
It was very, very steep off the edge. And so we get set up real quick and get everything ready. And I didn't have the greatest setup. And you guys kind of just kneeled behind an old root wad that had fell over.
Yeah.
We made do. We thought it would be, if those birds came in on a string, it would have just been close shooting. We would have been able to kill them when they showed up. I believe the bird that was straight ahead of us actually starts to work to the right, but we cannot get this dang bird to answer.
Yeah, he answered once to my original call. We knew, and we had two of them, because one was a little left, one was a little right.
Yep.
And he answered me that one time, and that was pretty much it, but we knew it was there.
Yeah, and so we're set up, and John's yelping on his mouth call, and I can kind of see the frustration. You just shake your head. You're like, another dang hinged-up bird, or just a bird that doesn't want to play the game. And you kind of... I'm always hesitant, and I wouldn't have necessarily did this anyways, but you look at me and kind of point at my box call. Box call out.
I'm like, get it out.
What? So here, me being real nervous, I'm like, I'll just call real quiet, just real light pressure. And I just did a real short, not a long, maybe 5 yelps, pretty soft. And they just hammered it instantly, almost cut the end of it off. Yeah. I'm like, all right, that worked.
Like they're almost going away.
Yeah.
Until you did that.
Yeah. And then it pulls them up. It pulled them up to our elevation, but now these birds were quite a bit to our right.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a real good, like on the rim of this drop off was real clean. We're sitting there and I accidentally kind of squawked my box a little. You're trying to keep that dang box quiet and you look at me and shake your head. Yeah. Like go ahead and do it.
I
didn't mean to ask you, but I kind of in a roundabout.
No, I'm like go. Yeah. I'm not, I'm whatever's going to work.
Hit
That's
the box again. And so
we
swipe it again. Same thing.
And then
I think we'd be quiet. We went pretty quiet there because he's real close at that point.
Yeah, at that point, he cut the distance in half again.
And then we start to see three birds, and you had made, either I heard you whisper to me or something, like, they're going to see you before they see me. And I'm like, so now I'm like tucked way into my tree. I got like half of my eye hanging out, but I do see three birds come in.
I'm looking at the angle that we're set up. We're set up at a good angle over us for filming, and I look over at you, and I'm like, dang, he's almost dead on.
Because the way we thought
the
birds, if they would have came in straighter to our left,
it would have been fine.
I would have never been picked, but they came to our right, which now like exposed me way before
I could see him.
Get exposed. So we're sitting there and I start to see the first bird come out and I'm like, I don't see a beard. And at that point it was real sunny and shady and the sun was kind of setting weird. And I'm like, I thought it was a Jake.
Right.
And then I see two birds come by and I'm like, whoa. That one had a really big, beard. And then
big old rope.
The other one came by, and it looked really good. I'm like, all right, we got two toms and a Jake is what I thought the whole time. Well, then they sit there and mess around on that top for a bit, and that hen turns toward, like, you know, they had heard a box call 5 minutes ago, but she turns directly towards us and takes off sprinting.
Yeah, right over to
us. Oh, boy. And there was a little dip between us about 50 yards out, a pretty good brushy dip, and then it got back up to that green grass. And when she took off, both those toms took off down to the brush. And I'm like, man, I hope they don't turn left in that little creek draw and get out of here. I don't know why they're running. Are they scared? Are they running towards us? Like, what's going on? You know, I can start seeing heads bob.
I'm like,
here they come. We're going to be good.
Yeah.
And
it was like 40 yard max to the minute they were showing up, and then better after that.
And first bird goes through. I'm like, oh, I let the Jake go. And then the second bird I can see, and I'm like, oh, it looks like the real, you know, the good one. And I can hear, I could hear you before that tell Simone something about which bird you were going to shoot, but I couldn't hear. I could just hear you guys chatting. And the bird I was watching, I'm like, what's taking John so long?
Why is he not shooting that, like, bird, with the big rope?
Yeah, I'm like, that bird's just sitting there, and maybe something's in his way. You know, I don't got your perspective. And pow! And the bird I was watching flew off. I'm like, what? John, there's no way John missed. And I think Simone, even off camera, said, I think you missed bad.
Yeah, he said something like, oh, man, you missed. I'm like, I didn't miss anything.
We walked out there, and there was some miscommunication. You had shot the bird in the back, which typically is the biggest.
Tends to be, from my experience.
And he got that bird in the middle to kind of come out of strut a little bit. And so there's, you know, your bird was an old bird, 3 years plus. Bird.
Oh, yeah.
Great bird.
Great bird.
Just, you know, he was a brawler, all tore up. But that was one of the, I told the story there a little bit, but really wanted to go back to, most people use box calls for locating birds. Windy days, high ridges, big country. And in that instance, we've talked about the bird I called in my wife, or for my wife, and Klickitat only would answer box call. I had to literally box call the thing into our lap.
Yeah.
And not necessarily box calls, but don't be afraid to try something different. Try your, you know, your crystal pot call. Try your slate pot call. Try a different striker. Try a box call. Try, you know, if you have a diaphragm that you think is way too raspy and not high enough pitch, try that, and then go try your high pitched one.
Yeah. Just find the note they want to hear.
I've learned from hunting with Eric Brott, now hunting with you, hunting with all these guys that call different, Chris Parrish.
Yeah.
There are times where the way Chris Parrish, which is surprising, you know, the way he calls isn't what the birds want to hear that day.
Yeah, because he's a phenomenal caller.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, he
can do whatever he wants with a call, but yet that bird wanted, you know, somebody else's old raspy call, and that's a little slower cadence and a little louder. And, and it's just, it's one of those things where just hit him with a lot and see if you've got something in your toolbox or your arsenal that's going to get him fired up.
That's right.
Yeah. Something different.
Yeah. I was not shy to saying, hey, Jason, get that box call.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
which I'm always hesitant. There's the, you know, everybody that's ran a box call knows, but some of you new guys out there, one thing bad about a box call is it's the absolute maximum movement in order to get a turkey sound
out.
That's
a fact. Yeah.
You know, diaphragms, very little movement. Pot call, like, I really only have to make a quarter inch circle with my fingers, but a box call, I'm having to move a paddle at least 3 inches minimum.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of movement. So I always get a little hesitant, but you either got to take the little bit of risk that you might get saw versus the chance that none of your other calls are working right now on this bird.
Yeah, and you're about to lose them.
Yeah. So it's pulling out all the stops. And
that was
one thing that, like, it reiterated what I learned back in Klickitat, you know, 10 years ago on my wife's bird, is like, there are times where a box call needs to be be used and can be a
good
very
box
effective.
Calls, because it's really hard to beat a lot of times. I mean, especially one with a good drop. And, you know, of course, Jason was using a Phelps box call. That kind of helped.
Yeah. That box is sounding really good. And we backed it up again this morning. And it maybe goes back to a little bit, is don't be like all the other hunters.
Yeah.
We use that box call more this morning, and just because it was something different. I bet you not everybody's thrown a box call at these birds. And
apparently not.
Once again, the same as last night, I think it worked better getting birds to answer when we were, like, searching for that gobble or working down a ridge versus our mouth calling. So it's just, you know, I guess the moral of the story is don't be afraid to try some, you know, all the calls in your.
Yeah.
In
you
your
may
best.
Have a call you love to use, and it may always work in the past, but yeah, if a bird's not tuning into it and he's just not answering, pull out the next one, move on, and keep trying.
All right. So I'm going to end up with everybody's going to stereotype me as, like, the guy that's deathly afraid of ticks, but I think you might have me. That's what we're going to close on this. I put a post on there on social media about permethrin and got, I probably haven't got more questions on a specific topic in a long time.
I gotta tell you right now, I'm holding one in my hand waiting for this to get done so I can get rid of it. Yeah.
As I was getting all the podcast stuff set up, you pulled one off of my leg and we are, to set the stage here, we're literally in a dirt camping spot.
There's no grass, there's no weeds, there's nothing here but dirt.
You went to toss your carcass last night.
Yeah.
Had six on the outside of your pants and just, I shouldn't have said it because it probably made you more nervous, but I'm like, man, if you have six on the outside,
how many
imagine
are
how
the
many
inside?
You got. And then you, as we were trying to fall asleep, all I could hear was John over there yelling about ticks in his tent.
I was like, hey, I got to drop my pants now.
Yeah.
I was plucking them off for like, I don't even know, 30 minutes. They were everywhere on my legs. And I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. And you said you've never, I've always gotten the ticks bad over here, but you said you've never experienced something like we've have the last couple of days.
I've been walking through brush and always cutting the distance through all kinds of junk. And I've, you know, yeah, randomly I'll get a tick on me with the permethrin. It's, you watch them climb little ways and just fall off. But I'll tell you what, this is a whole new game right here. And we're just sitting on dirt.
Yeah.
And they're constantly, we're looking down like, oh, here comes another one walking up my legs.
Yeah. It's,
been constant.
It's nuts. So I'm going to just do a quick recap on, you know, some of the people at, like, where do you get it? What do you use? The two brands that I use, and I use them interchangeably, is Repel or Sawyer. And I like to use the aerosol.
Yeah.
I don't like to use the spray or like a squirt bottle.
Oh, you know, I use the squirt.
Use squirt bottle. So I just use the aerosol. I think it usually comes in mixed at like 0.5%.
Yeah.
And I'm not here to give any advice. Like, there is some, you know, permethrin is a poison. So do all your own due diligence. Like, make sure you do not put it on your skin.
That's right.
It needs to be put on your clothes and it needs to be allowed to dry.
Yeah. Put on your socks too, your upper socks.
Yeah. And one thing I would just recommend, I know you guys aren't hunting in gators, but like, I think I'm faring a little bit better. You and Simone have had a few more on, you know, get inside your pants. Like, the gators are hot when it's 85, but I'm like, I'm just avoiding dealing with them up my pants right now.
Yeah, you are. But I'll give you that. I can't stand it when it's this hot and wearing gaiters. I just my
it's
feet
miserable.
Boil all the time.
Yep.
But yeah, and I'm definitely picking more ticks off the inside of my
pants. Yeah, you are. Oh, I got a tick crawling up my boot right now.
I know. I'm telling you.
See that on my boot as we're recording this.
I know. I have one inside my pants on my leg right now. I'm holding it with my hands because I'm talking through a microphone with the other one.
All right. Well, on that note, we're on day two of day four of our Washington hunt. I appreciate having you on, John.
It's
you're
been
a
fun.
Wealth of knowledge when it comes to turkeys. And I want to recognize, you know, you do a lot with the veterans, a lot with the youth. Can't thank you enough for what you do for people that want to get out and experience an awesome turkey hunt. So,
well, it's
I really
all about giving
that.
Back. You know, we have a good time doing ourselves, but you get to a point where you just want to give back, and that's important for all of us. So, take a kid out, take a veteran out, take somebody out that's never hunted. Do whatever you got to do to spread the sport. We need everybody out there.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Thanks for hunting with me this week. It's been a blast.
Yeah, it's been fun.
We're not even close to being done yet, so
we're gonna go boil some more.
If you want to find out more about John, follow him on Instagram, Northwest Spur Chasers. The guy spends a ton of time out in the turkey woods and knows his stuff. Thanks, John. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit seafoamworks.com to learn more.
You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.